Welcome back to the Passion Pit, the podcast that spotlights the movers, the shakers, the indie art makers of New York City. I'm Jay Michaels. Welcome. Today's guest is an indie art maker, but he's coming to New York. He's not from New York. He's from literally halfway around the world. We're in Pride Month. And a special one of that, this is the 50th anniversary of Stonewall. I recall covering the 25th annual for the New York Daily News, and it was a wild time. Helping to create an equally wild time is Robert Hoffman, coming to us from Australia, where he is a celebrated singer and performance artist. His current show, What the Fandango, will premiere here in America as part of the Pride celebration. I had to get up pretty early to catch him, thanks to the time difference, but I'm thrilled I did. And now, from down under...
Hello, Jay.
Good morning to you. Well, it's morning for me at any rate. Robert Hoffman, this is Jay Michaels. If I'm on the line, you're on the air.
That's right. Oh, my God, how exciting.
That's good. What time is it over there?
It is exactly 12 hours ahead. It's 10:30 at night.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, there you go. This is your last official act for the day and my first. Good to speak to you again. How's everything going? Plans to get you over here into to New York. How's everything going?
Oh, it's going well. I'm doing some rehearsals. I'm also in another production. I'm in I've got a small role in the opera Tosca. I'm just busy doing that. As soon as that finishes, I get on the plane to New York.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that's great. I'm going to talk about that part of your life in a moment. Tell our listeners all about What the Fandango and what they should expect in just a couple of weeks.
Well, exactly. It's 2 weeks. Tuesday, actually, is opening night. What do they expect? Well, they get me, the Robert Hoffman. I'm a singer, and it's a musical comedy cabaret. I dress up as four different characters. They each have about 10 to 15 minutes in the show, and then I come on as sort of a neutral character, which is basically me. And all the music accompaniment is provided by Will Holzhauser, a New York-based fantastic piano accordion player, who I got through various connections from my Australian accordion player who knew someone, you know, those connections
of course.
You go through.
I know a guy who knows a guy, yeah.
That's right. Piano accordion is an amazing instrument for cabaret because it's intimate. The player faces the audience, unlike pianos. You know, they just look at the audience. And it creates a real nice sort of dance vibe for me as I'm changing. It inspires more movement than piano. It's just a great instrument. And it's a bit of a South American flavor. That's why it's called What the Fandango, to give it a bit of a South American feel. Some of the songs have a South American flavor. Do you want me to tell you more about the characters? Or
please, go right ahead. I would love to hear myself.
Well, it opens with a character called Dr. Gay Time, who she's a singing teaching academic who's a bit frustrated. She really yearns to be a 1940s style nightclub singer, you know, a sultry woman from the 1940s who sang in glamorous nightclubs. That's where she wants to be. So that's where she often goes to in this show. And then there's Helmut Wunderlicher, who is a German relationship counselor and a singing teacher. He's obsessed with the idea of healing troubled hearts and souls with song. And for this particular show, he is... He's converting standard romantic songs into same-sex serenades, of course, to celebrate World Pride and Stonewall 50. This goes together perfectly. Then there's Susan Higgins, who is a church musician who everybody knows somebody like her. This is all Christian denominations, and I suspect even other religions that involve music. She plays the guitar and sings hymns, and she's not aware of how terrible she really is. But she enjoys foisting herself on the congregation. She has long red hair, a paisley top, and a denim skirt. People really identify with her because a lot of people have sat through her when they've attended religious services of almost any denomination, but particularly, I have to say, Catholic and Episcopalian. I have to single out those two because she's a specialist in either of those areas. And then comes Dr. Gay Tom reappears in red sequins and a very lush, glamorous wig because to fulfill her dream of being a 1940s style.
I was about to say her dream has come true. Then, very good.
Oh, it has. A better place for her to come through than New York City, of course. You know, she can't wait. I mean, she's beside herself, literally. And then along comes Sister Maureen Virgilius, who's an Irish nun who's gotten to a spot of bother with the church. So she's now moonlighting as a marriage counsellor. And I'm not going to tell you which song she uses for her marriage counselling, but you'll probably know it. I'm not going to tell you. You have to come to the show to find out.
Of course.
All the changes happen on stage. They're all me, and they're all quick change costumes. And some of the changes happen to music, so it's a lot of fun. The audience shouldn't be bored for a minute, I don't think. What else was I going to say? Oh yeah, don't get alarmed. I go down to sort of black shorts and a t-shirt, so you don't see anything you don't want to see in terms of nudity. So don't get concerned.
You're in the West Village. That's like overdressed.
Well, I know. I did think about that. But I figured if I'm going to get any more clothes off, I'd need to go to the gym for a year.
Well, there you go.
Personal trainer.
Right. So, okay.
And who's got time for that?
Believe me, I understand.
Yeah, so we're going down to a discreet amount. Enough, you know. You'll see enough. The range of music is incredible. It goes right from Schubert. I get hold of a Schubert art song and put some new words onto it, which audiences seem to enjoy. There's a Stephen Sondheim, two Stephen Sondheim songs. There's a Rodgers and Hart. My Fellow Valentine gets a look in with new words by Helmut Wunderlicher. There's three original songs in the show. So they get even some Gilbert and Sullivan, which I've stolen the theme from Sullivan and put new words to it. So there's really music to suit almost every musical palette.
This is wild. So you have all these people who essentially use music for their own trade. So it's like we're coming to see you, but we're getting five different cabaret artists up on that stage at the same time.
Well, that's exactly right. And the characters are such that they have plausible reasons to be singing because they're all actually singers in real life. So they're like doing a mini cabaret each. You're quite right. So it's like, yeah, they are doing a little mini cabaret, and they're based on people I've met over the years in both singing, teaching, and broader life. So you're quite right. It's like four or five mini cabarets. Yep.
Oh, that's terrific. Oh, wow. That's great. Now, when I read this in your bio, I blinked, and now I'm hearing this again, and I'm still blinking. You're an opera singer. You are a trained opera singer.
Yep, that's right. I trained in Sydney and in Perth and a little bit in Germany and a little bit in London. The biggest role I had was Coco in Mikado. I really enjoy comedy roles. And Dulcamara in The Elixir of Love. I've also done roles in Die Fledermaus and Orpheus in the Underworld and all sorts of things. With West Australian Opera, I've worked in Sydney at the Sydney Opera House with the Australian Opera Chorus and other cabaret. So, yeah, opera and the learning to sing opera is a very strange process these days. Well, learning to sing full stop is a very strange process because singing is not necessarily a hard thing to learn, but it's a hard thing to teach. And you really do have to do a lot of soul searching to be a singer. And so it's a lot of the undercurrents in the show are about that. But these undercurrents sort of expand into jokes about, which so everybody gets, even if they're not performing artists. You know what I mean? So it's not about, it's not an in show. There's not too many in jokes. So if you're not a singer or a performing artist and you're an audience, in fact, audience is the most important people of all, of course, because
of
without course. Audience, there's nobody to perform for.
There you go. So as much as this is about theater people, quote unquote, the humor is broad enough. Everyone's going to get it. So we're able
definitely.
To laugh at ourselves. And we're going to laugh at other people that we know.
That's right. And by the way, while I'm an opera singer, I love nothing more than a Broadway musical, which is why I'm so excited to do this show in New York. I teach music theatre at the West Australian Academy of Performing Arts. I teach singing in music theatre. I reckon if I could have danced, I'm not really a very good dancer, I could have become a music theatre singer, but with my dance skills, I think, as you'll see in the show, they're sort of latent. But I can't do what those Broadway guys do, so I just have to do my own thing, sort of thing. But I love.
You're not a dancer. You are like
a lot of crossover.
In audition notices, it always says those who can dance. So that's you. You're not a dancer. You can dance.
I can dance if I have to. That's right. takes a while.
Now, did you start out as was your initial aspiration to be an opera singer?
My initial aspiration was, yes, to be a classical singer, because I really loved opera. I loved classical music. I loved Mozart and a lot of the great operas as a young, sort of a late teens, early 20s. But then, the first musical was Cats. And, of course, I fell in love with that straight away, the first big production. And then I've been in amateur productions of Les Mis, which I think everybody on earth has been in.
For sure, of course.
So there's nothing that unique about that. And I did initially have aspirations of wanting to be an opera singer, but then in recent years I discovered my whole notion of what singing is completely got exploded, because I heard the great English jazz singer Norma Winston singing, and she was breaking every single rule about classical singing in the book, but it was so moving and just so beautiful. I thought, what are we all doing with this opera stuff? Opera's fabulous, but any style of singing can be fabulous and be very communicative and moving. It's just that they're different modes of communication. They're all equally as challenging, and they all have special challenges. I love great music theatre singing. I love great jazz singers. So I consider myself an opera singer crossover into music theatre, and I wouldn't call myself a jazz singer. That's a bit dangerous because it's highly specialised, making stuff up as you go along.
Indeed.
But I've become quite an eclectic sort of crossover guy now, yeah.
It's really interesting what you say about breaking all the rules. I always hear that you have to know the rules perfectly in order to know how to break them. So I guess that's where people find inspiration in doing that. Now we have an opera singer who has fallen in love with musical theater. And where did What the Fandango come from? Where did all of this backstory lead you to playing five insanely interesting people with an accordion pianist behind you? How did that birth from all this?
Well, a good question. My first show I did with piano, that was called Desperately Young at Heart, with the same four characters. Then I decided to give them other things to do. And I thought, I met Cathy Travers, who was my Australian-based piano accordion player, who wasn't available to come to New York City. And I loved her playing so much. I thought, gee, that would be fun to do a show with her playing. So I asked her. We had a jam session. We did some standard, middle-of-the-road stuff. She improvised some beautiful accompaniments. I thought, this is going to be great. So I selected a whole lot of songs that would work with piano accordion. Some are very unusual on piano accordion. You'll be pleasantly surprised, I think. So that's where the piano accordion idea came from. And then we discovered she is classical piano accordion, which has a very much South American emphasis in the way she plays and the style of music she plays, piazzola and that sort of thing, and a lot of tangos and bossa novas happening in there. And so we thought, what are we going to call the show? So Fandango is a Spanish dance from about the 1700s. And, of course, South America has such a heavy Spanish influence. We thought, Fandango, what the Fandango, which is like saying what the...
WTF, exactly.
So, yeah, WTF had a multi sort of meaning. Like, what the Fandango, let's do it anyway, or what the Fandango is going on. So I thought a good name for a cabaret show, relatively brief, and it gave the South American feel, which the piano accordion instantly does to the show. It's a great song by Stephen Sondheim called The Boy From, which is a satire of the famous Boy from Ipanema,
right,
by a famous South American composer whose name escapes me. But it's very funny. It puts a same-sex twist on The Boy from Ipanema, which Sondheim wrote in the 60s, I think, very early on. Yeah.
Huh. Now, What the Fandango has scored a lot of points where you are. It's actually... you've won awards, you have excellent reviews, etc. How has it been received in Australia, where you're from?
Well, really well. We first did it at Perth Fringe, which is, by the way, is the third largest fringe festival in the world. The largest is Edinburgh. Second largest is Adelaide, also in Australia. And Perth, in Western Australia, has the third largest. So
I didn't know that.
Insane.
That's great.
Yeah, it's a fun fact. It got very well received there. I got 5-star reviews, 4-star reviews last year, and another a set of 5-star reviews this year at Perth Fringe World. I took my other show, Desperately Young at Heart, to Edinburgh. That won Best Cabaret from Western Australia in 2014. That was when I'd been brewing a cabaret for about 10 years. I kept saying, I've got to do this. And then I finally decided to come up with a concept and book myself in for Fringe. So there's the point of no return. I got a favourite director, a guy I know, Stuart Maunder, who directs, he's directed musicals in Australia and opera, and he's presently artistic director of South Australian Opera. He's a great guy. He directed me. He helped me write the first show. He directed the second show. So it all grew from there, and the audiences seemed to really respond well. And I feel there's a really strong connection with the audience. They laugh at the jokes, and there's some audience interaction. It's very limited. But there is some liturgical dancing involved. So if you're frightened about being selected, perhaps don't take the front row. But don't be too frightened. Don't be too scared. It's absolutely fine. You keep all your clothes on and you just do a bit of liturgical dancing with Susan Higgins. It's absolutely harmless. But I've got to say that the volunteer is usually a man, not a woman. I find men on stage slightly funnier than women. Women often look too good, actually, is part of the problem. They're so elegant and beautiful that they get on stage and you think, well, they're not funny, are they? So that's why I often choose men as my audience participants. I'm probably giving away too much, but anyway.
It's funny you say that. I have an improv troupe as another client, and they invited me up on stage during a performance once, and now I've been doing this for years, and I thought, okay, fine, whatever. I was really funny because I had no clue as to what I was doing. So I think you're right. I think guys up there, they don't know where to go. Women go with the flow, I think, a little bit more than us guys. Okay, now going with the flow. There you are, this opera singer who has now won great acclaim with this uproarious cabaret in your home country. I'm not going to think it's just the obvious that, okay, well, it's Stonewall, it's Pride, whatever. What made you say, okay, I'm coming to America? I'm getting on a plane and going halfway around the world to an audience who may not know me and present my heartfelt work to them. What drug did you take? How much booze did you drink? What made you do it?
Well, very good question. Well, when I was in New York in December, I went to see quite a few cabaret venues, and they all had their pluses and minuses. I saw some great shows, of course, some great Broadway musicals too, and some opera. I saw heaps. And I was trying to scope out venues. Then a friend of mine said, oh, do you know Father Graham Napier? He used to be precentor of the Episcopalian, which is called Anglican in Australia, of the main cathedral in Perth. He's now rector of St. John's in the village, in the West Village. And I went and visited him for lunch because he'd seen my shows in Perth and really enjoyed them. And he said, you know, we're doing a special program of events for the Stonewall 50 and New York World Pride. Your cabaret show would fit in just right. And he said, it's a bit louche, so you won't put it in the church. We'll put it in the church hall, which is called the Revelation Gallery.
Right.
And, you know, everything's happening in June to coincide with those two big events.
Of course.
And so it was fate. It was fate. I could have done the Harley business thing and, you know, found a venue and all that sort of thing and done it commercially. But I thought, no, this is a good way to dip your toe, to test a show with a US-based audience. In a church hall, in a sort of low-key performance in the West Village, very intimate performance, is a good way to see how Americans, or if some expat Australians indeed, go for this humour, rather than, you know, go and hire a commercial venue and all the pressures associated with a commercial venue, hire a sort of a venue that's attached to a church. And the funny thing is, two of my characters actually are making fun of the church, which is one of the great ironies. This parish is a very, very left-wing parish. So it all felt like it was meant to be. you know, so if it goes well, I may well come back and do it all properly, you know, set the thing up and attempt to be commercial about it. But this is just like a toe in the water, so to speak, just to see how it goes with an American audience. So the people that are coming, I know it works in Edinburgh. I know the Scottish and English like it. I know Australians like it generally. And I think some Canadians have seen it. I'm not sure. I don't know if any American do they count? I'm not sure.
That's so funny. I think some Canadians really are. That's great.
But I don't think any people from the US have seen it. So I thought, well, we'll find out. Because, you know, transatlantic humour, well, Australia has a similar sense of humour to England, although we're somewhere between, Australia is somewhere between, humour-wise, the US and England, as far as English-speaking comedy goes. So what better way to test it than in New York City? You know, I thought, it's all meant to be. Sometimes something feels right, so you just do it. That's what's going on.
I've known several people from Australia, and you're absolutely right. You have the cleverness of British humor, but you kind of you're a little looser, a little freer with your humor than the British normally are. Yes, and oh my gosh, when you were describing the characters, I thought, you know, he's going to be in a church. What? Wait a minute. But I've been to St. John's not long ago, and I saw the people who celebrate Mass there, and yeah, it didn't look like your customary church. So I think they're going to love your humor as much as anyone. I was going to say you're quite brilliant in doing this. You think this is your toe in the water. You have picked a brilliant neighborhood at a brilliant time, and the theater itself and the church is right in main foot traffic, easy to get to. It's like a block from the subway. It's right. Yeah. It's like a hundred feet from 7th Avenue South. You've you were invited, which is absolutely flattering. You're really smart on this. You didn't have to pick a venue where you're competing with the other 8,000 acts that are going to be in there. You are it for this theater, and I think it's wonderful. I think it's just going to be a blast.
Oh, so do I. And any proceeds raised go to a charity through the church called Add Up, which is quite a bizarre charity, but very important. It's even hard to explain. It does my head in. It's Australian expats living in America raising money for refugees sent from two detention centres in Australia, Nauru and Manus, which under our previous Prime Minister and your previous President, administration, there was an agreement that we'd send about 1,000 or so refugees that we didn't want over to the US. So we are raising money. Well, apparently the US government supports them for about 90 days and then they're on their own. So then they can, our charity steps in and possibly helps those refugees. Wow. So there's a very good cause if there's any money made. So that's why the ticket prices are slightly tiered. Each patron gets the same thing, but if they feel like being generous for the cause, it doesn't come to me. It goes to the Adds Up charity. So, and by the way, Father Graham Napier pointed out to me that a surprising number of the refugees actually are refugees because of their sexual orientation or their gender or whatever it is, because in the country where they come from, it might not be socially acceptable or even very dangerous to live as an openly gay person. So they flee for that reason. So apparently, I'm not saying obviously all refugees are that, but there's quite a few. So the cause for the charity and the actual events in New York City are slightly aligned as well. So, you know, you're doing a great thing just by turning up.
So their ticket is tax deductible. So their ticket is tax deductible.
Well, I don't know how the America. I'm not going to say that on the other. It could well be. Yeah.
They're offering a donation to a church, so I'm going to gather that there's at least an element of tax deduction within it, which is excellent. I've worked in philanthropy for like 20 years, and the one thing that always bugs me sometimes is people go for such visible charities. They say, okay, well, I'm doing the American Cancer Society, I'm doing this, just so people can hear a name drop sometimes. And as much as it's a good cause, they're trying to put their name to something. I think this is amazing. Who would have heard of this charity? Who would have known it existed if not for you? So you're making quite a statement, and you're doing a really amazing thing. And of course, the same-sex orientation, okay, that goes right with the production scheme all the way through. But it's really amazing when I hear someone say, okay, I'm working with this charity, and even if its cause is universal, the fact that it's a small charity, the fact that they're just trying to do good, you're grabbing someone who really needs the money. And I think that's wonderful. I think it's just a really great thing that you're doing. You're coming over with your sister, who's your manager. So you have you have some support there. The performances, you have two performances on the 20. Tell us the dates and the times for the performances.
Yeah, Tuesday the 25th of June at 7:30.
Right.
And then again on Saturday the 29th of June at 7:30 as well, which is on the eve of the Great Big March for World Pride, and very close to the starting point, in fact. So anybody who's in the West Village for that march, I'm sure there's a billion entertainment offerings that night. But fortunately, mine will be over about 8:30. So if they have some rather more, nightclubby sort of loose entertainments in mind, particularly if they're, youngsters or people who are pretending they're very young for the season, they can go on from 8:30 onwards and be at their favorite night spot, well in time before, they won't miss anything. They can use me as a warm up,
I'm blinking again because, like I say, I think the brilliance of the marketing has fallen on you again, because here you are the night before. I was around for Stonewall 25, and I remember the march. Wow. I remember the pandemonium. I was working for the Daily News, and I actually covered it at that point. And I remember the pandemonium in the village. You couldn't see in front of you because it was so many people. And so I'm imagining the night before, you are right along Christopher Street. You are right along 7th Avenue South. The foot traffic is going to be amazing. And you're absolutely right. 8:30, if you're going off to a nightclub, if you're going off to a party, if you're going off to any event, you stop in, you have a blast, you do a good deed for people who truly, truly need it, and then you go on your way and do whatever you want for the rest of the night. Marketing-wise, it's amazing. Marketing-wise, you hit it right on the head. I can't even think of something to say, oh, well, you should have done this. Nope, it's all there. And I think your act sounds amazing. I'm such a fan of the tour de force. It's one thing someone gets up and sings and dances. Okay, very talented. Five people are getting up when you stand up there. So I think that's absolutely amazing. Now, you mentioned you may want to do something else. So what's next for you now? And what are you looking? Where are you looking for this show to go into the future?
Well, I'm hoping to get a tour through regional Western Australia. Which it doesn't sound like much, but Western Australia is about the size of half of the US with a population of 2 million. So that would do everyone's head in.
We call that a national tour, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, and I've applied for government funding for that. I might investigate Brighton Fringe in the UK. I might do Edinburgh Fringe. I'm not sure. I might do that again. I did that before. I'm hoping I might do a new cabaret show, which has a slightly different feel to it. But I think there's a lot of life in the show, and I think it needs to be seen by a different segment of the world. That's why I'm coming to New York City. So I really want to give this show to a new audience just to see what they think of it, as I said, because the most important person in the room in a show is not the person on stage, it's the audience.
There you go. Yep.
This is what you should never forget as a performer. You're actually not the most important person. The most important person is the people you're singing or performing to. They're the people. So it's a great feeling if you see if the show works with a different audience. Then I can give me new ideas to maybe research this one or maybe make a brand new show. So that's the next thing. Onwards and upwards.
That's really great. That's really great. It's funny you say that about the audience because and you're a teacher as well, and all your characters seem to teach. Mm. The whole point of the audience is that the act is a parable, and where are you that you're doing a parable, but in a church, is a parable, and your audience learns. So you're doing an amazing thing there. I hear so many times people say New York premiere, world premiere, and all of that. This really is, because you're coming from halfway around the world. No one here has even seen it. So this is truly a premiere.
Yeah, it's actually Perth to New York is one of the longest flights you can do in the world. Do you realize that? It's two of the most geographically distant capital cities. I think New York, Perth is about as far apart on the globe as you can get. It's quite astonishing.
Wow. Well, I always hear performers. I'm sorry.
No, just the time difference says that the 12-hour time difference says that it's completely the opposite side of the world.
Wow.
If it were any less or more, it'd be, you know what I mean, either one way further
right.
in either direction, if you know what I mean. The fact that we're exactly 12 hours ahead means we're exactly as far away as we can possibly get from New York.
I laugh at that because I have performers all the time who tell me, look, I'm coming from Queens. I need the time. Stop. This man's coming from Australia. That is really terrific. You hit another wink, by the way. I'm sure you know in New York there's a ticket service called Fandango. And
oh,
yes, and I laugh because you're sort of giving that subliminal thing. What the Fandango? Fandango is tickets. Go order tickets to see Robert Hoffman in What the Fandango.
Except you have to go to Eventbrite, of course, not Fandango.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They'll figure that out when they click links. But it's just funny. You're immediately making us think of tickets. So again, the marketing gods are smiling on you one more time. Robert, I can't wait to see your show. I think it's going to be a blast. I think the audience is going to love it. I think we're going to see a lot more of you. And there are people in the world who are going to go to bed thanking you for your efforts, for what you have done, and audiences roaring with laughter and remarking about you for a long time. And when you get home and when they say, how did you do? You're going to say, I got a standing ovation. I'll bet on that. It is a pleasure to speak to you.
Well, let's hope.
Yes. It's a pleasure to speak to you. I look forward to hearing more about the show and everything that's happening. And here's to the future. Thank you so much for chatting today.
Thank you, by the way. Thank you. There is a link to the trailer somewhere you can possibly put on the website. Somewhere.
Oh, have no fear of that. Have no fear of that. I'll slather all the good stuff onto this. So that's no problem whatsoever.
Good.
Thanks again. Have a good night. And I will talk to you very soon.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Jay.
Ciao.
Bye-bye. Ciao.
Thank you, Robert. That was terrific. I got to make one thing clear. I work really late hours. I'm at different productions. I'm on the phone with reviewers and things like that. Really late, because it just suddenly occurred to me. I said I had to get up pretty early, and it was 10:30 in the morning. But you all understand what I'm saying. You're all night owls like I am. Oh, please say that you all are. I can't wait to see all the incarnations that that Rob has for us for his show at the end of the month. I hope you will join me for a good cause and a great show. Give him hell, mate. Next time, we will speak with Alex Pires and Stephanie Winland, stars of the new web TV series, Peas in a Pod. That's right, gang. Indie Art is now on TV. Till next time.